So the methodology adopted here is mapping of the element at risk, the hazard assessment, vulnerability assessment, risk analysis, risk reduction scenarios model, flood hazard and early warning system, and then development of the online system. Just a minute, I think there's a problem with the DC system. It's not moving again, it's not active. I don't know. And this thing has registered. Okay. So to be able to get the risk of any hazard in an area, it is based on this equation. Risk is equal to hazard times the vulnerability of the elements and then the amount of the elements that are exposed to the hazard. So the analysis or the study was based on that. So to be able to get the element at risk, the time I started this project, actually that was 2014, 16, 15 to 16. That time there wasn't any building footprints in Ghana to be able to adequately get the risk that is a human being who will be affected when the disaster strike. You need a building footprint. But then if you don't have a building footprint in an area, you use a method known as mapping units, where you actually try to estimate the buildings in an area from a high resolution satellite image. So that's what I did at that time. But thanks to Google, now they have building footprints by using machine learning to extract all the building footprints in Africa. So that data set is there. So now if you want to do that, you can easily download that data to work on it. So the satellite image that was used captured in March 2016, that was when this shows the circle area, when the area was, that flyover was being constructed. And then this was before 2016, there's an old circle area. So with this information, we digitize, as I mentioned, what's the mapping units or the building, we estimate the building from the high resolution satellite image to this section of that work. And then you actually generated random what's points over the building, the mapping units. And then where each point falls, we actually select that mapping unit and then actually count the number of buildings in that mapping unit from a high resolution satellite image. So we use that information to actually estimate the average building per mapping unit. So at the end of the day, this was the attribute information that we had. So we have the number of buildings column indicating the total number of buildings. And then the area was also zoned into residential, commercial, industrial, and other things. So this is a real map of the. Now, after getting your element at risk database, the next stage is to actually do a modeling of the disaster. So in this case, we selected flood. That's what we were working on. We want to model flood disaster. We need. Special data called DEM data, digital elevation model. So the digital elevation model, when you process it, you'll be able to extract the catchment, like the river network in a system, and then based on that information, you'll be able to actually do your model. So we obtain ASTAR data, which is also a satellite data, and use that information to actually extract that. In order to get the accurate the drainage, basically when you use GIS to just delineate the river network, some will not fall on the natural water bodies. And to actually optimize that, we use optimization where we digitize. If from the high resolution image, you see the drainage. So you digitize at the center of that drainage, and then you burn that information in the DEM data before you do the extraction. So when we went through all those processes and we extracted the DEM data, the area that we normally call odor drain, in that circle, we say odor drain or gutter, is actually a river. So you can see a river starting from in the mountains, like a Bree area, flowing down through the area to the sea. So that is the catchment that we delineated. With this catchment delineated, we feed this information into a hydrological modeling system, HEC-HMS, developed by the US Army Corps of Engineers. So with that tool, we can actually simulate and then get your runoff when it rains through rains in the catchment. So we selected this approach, like KEF number method, that is soil conservation KEF number method. That actually is, there are several other methods that can be used. But then this method is normally used when you want to quantify the impact of the development in the area. That is the terrain, how the terrain contributes to the flooding situation. So that method was selected, and then this method is also used, the standard method for excess precipitation modeling. And then to be able to do this, you need to quantify the KEF number of the area. The KEF number actually gives you information about the area that is impervious, that's the percentage of impervious area in the catchment, and then the pervious area. So using that information, we'll be able to estimate the amount of water that will be drained into the soil or absorbed into the soil, and the one that will be left for as runoff. So we did this computation, and then to actually get the percentage cover, we have to do a modeling based on a satellite data to calculate the percentage of the impervious surfaces in the area by using a machine learning algorithm known as regression partition algorithm, which was used. So to be able to actually delineate the various land cover traps, you need to get a spectral profile. So this information gives you the spectral profile of the various land covers. And then this was fed into the system to generate this tree. So based on this tree, the system will use it to actually calculate whether this place is a flat, is a surface area, rooftop, whether this road network and the rest. Yeah, so with that information, we able to extract the entire catchment, the various cover types, so that you can see the... So you can see the various land cover types, the rooftops and the soil, the water bodies and the vegetation in the...
For who?
So again, with the GIS application, we were able to calculate the various percentage cover of the surface parameter that we needed to do the modeling. So again, feeding this information into runoff modeling approach using this method, we were able to actually estimate the water when the water that will flow through the channel when it rains. Now, to be able to do that, again, as I mentioned, we need a historical data of all the flooding situation or the river, the rainfall event that occur in the area. So using the rainfall, we fitted several probability distribution to it, and then normally Gambert distribution, what function was selected. And then using this to generate a parameter known as reduced variance. So when you plot this, you get this kind of regression line. And with this equation, you'll be able to actually calculate the various return periods. That is the historical, the probability of a particular event occurring. So this was the output of the exercise. And then with this, we fed it into the hydrological model. So this is just one of the outputs. So a flood return period of 100 years. So 100 year return period, this was the output. So if you have this amount of rainfall, then this will be the peak flow. Yes. Now, after calculating, that is a hydrological model, hydrology modeling, after getting the peak flow, we want to find out the areas in the in the communities where it will be flooded if that amount of water flows through the channel. So to be able to do that, there are two methods that are used. You have 1D hydraulic modeling, and then we have 2D. So for the 1D, we need a cross-sections profile of the channel. So we use GIS to create this cross-section profile. And then with that information, you actually get this the geometric data of the catchment. This actually gives a detailed view. So you can see how, when it rains, so this part of a section of the river that was modeled. So it rains, let's say you have the upper stream region, it rains here. You see the shape of the channel, the area, and the water that will fall here, this will flow, drain into this, and then they will all accumulate and then flow through this channel. So this one gives a better view of the channel, that is the upper section of the channel. So you can see how water will flow through this. So this is the size of the drain. And so all these areas, when water falls here, it will flow into this and beyond. So to do the 2D modeling, as I said, you have 1D, and to do 2D, you also need a geometric data. So we created this hydraulic, this geometric data of 10 meter by 10 meter over there. Catchment for the 2D model. So when you simulated, this was the result of the output. You can see the water draining through here. Yeah. So in this diagram, let me draw attention. You can see that normally, as I mentioned before, when there's flooding, we normally say it's as a result of building on waterways, the drains are choked, blah, blah, blah. But then this data set that we were using, it's like you have taken all the buildings from the surface of the earth, so it's left with just the surface. So you can see the extent. Still, when it rains, you see the area that will be flooded because the amount of water is more than the channel can convey. So when we run the system, this is actually the hydraulic modeling system. You see these arrows showing the areas where the water will flow through. Yeah. As I mentioned earlier, you know, when there's flooding, people say that it's because of the buildings there. That's why the area has been flooded. But then this arrow clearly shows that naturally the water flows, spreads around the area, whether there are buildings or no buildings. Once you have that amount of water, the area will be flooded. Yeah. So again, as I mentioned, that was just one of the days we calculated for eight different return period. So we have the least return period to the followed by this 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20, 50, 100, 200, 500, and then 1,000 year return. Now this information gives you that if you have a few 100 year flooding, it means that the area that will be flooded, when you have a lower event flood, will not, those areas will not be flooded. And then another time, if you have, let's say 200 year flood, it means that the area that you see today getting flooded will be, what it will go beyond that. So normally people also ask that question that they have lived in this area for the past 10 years or whatever years, the area has not been flooded before. So maybe because of somebody's activity, that's why the place is flooded. So it depends on the return period event. So when you lay this in on the high resolution image in the GIS, you see the areas, the buildings that will be affected by the flooding. Then this was the Goy station that got flooded, and then the water, this is spilled over, and then there was fire. Yeah. So again, this one is to show the number of buildings that we've got affected when the area gets flooded. So this can be used to calculate the risk of in that area. So we also conducted a participatory GIS survey because we needed information concerning the past events. So people who are staying in the area for the past years and they have actually had the first-hand experience with flooding in the area, we interview them, try to estimate the flooding level so that we can use it to actually calibrate the modeling that we did. So based on the interviews and the damage that resulted for the various flooding that they had in the area, this gives you a depth damage function, which is used in risk assessment. So what we are trying to model here is that we want to see the various scenarios, like mitigating scenarios, that can be adopted to improve upon the flooding situation in the city. So what we did was that we divided the area into three. So we have the lower, the middle portion, and then the upper section of the twin. And then with this, we use GIS to actually desert. You know, normally we do deserting of the drains. So we're using GIS to desert. So the first section, the lower section, will be deserted to 0.5 meters. Then the upper one will be deserted to up to the middle one, 0.75 meters, and then the upper one, 1 meter. So if you desert the drain to that extent, what will be the impact on the flooding situation? So after doing that, you run the model, you will see that only these small areas that were what saved, if like you deserted the drains, you're hoping that you solve the flooding problem. So the flooding situation was still okay. So only these areas were. Then the next one was, we tried to create a retention for a reservoir. So if you create a reservoir here, which can take excess water as much as maybe over 3,000 cubic meters, what would be its impact on the flooding situation? So after doing this simulation of a retention pond, then we run the model again. After running the model, we see that these areas will be saved. So you can see that the retention pond will improve the flooding situation mitigation better than just the certain. So the next thing that we look at was that if you combine the two, the certain and then the what retention pond, to what extent will they what? So you see the impact. And so that was what we did to see. And then the cross section of the water in the drain. Yeah, you see the scenario that was modeled. So to be able to do flood forecasting, studies have shown that if you are able to forecast the flood event, let's say ahead of time, about 30 minutes or more, then you are able to save like let's say properties and the people who will be affected. But then studies also show that even if you give a warning system, which is about 1 hour ahead, you get to a stage that the percentage of reduction in damage, it plateaus. It doesn't continue, it's exponential. So you have to estimate the time that you can get and then when you issue a warning system. Now to be able to do that, we have to do a study. So this one shows the normal flooding. So assuming that when it reaches this portion, there will be flooding. So if you don't have any early warning system, then the people will be taken by event. But if you have a warning system, as soon as it reaches here, you send a signal that there's flooding. So people start moving to higher ground. So to be able to do that, you have to simulate several models. So we did this time series model, the meteorological models in a system. So with that, we are able to do this simulation. So for the various flood situations, we're able to do this. Then that is without any warning system in place. If you don't have any warning system, this will be the hydrology of the area. But with the warning system in place, then you need that you can get, as soon as it hits this level threshold, you'll be able to send a signal ahead of time. Yeah. So to be able to actually develop the online system that we intended, we have to convert all the images, like the raster data that were produced when you run the model. You generate a raster information in the form of a flood depth. So we have to convert this information to a vector that is the approach we adopted. So using this two R2, we're able to convert all the raster data to vector data. Then we use Django, which is a Python framework for website development, to actually develop our website. And then the database system that we use is PostGIS. Actually, it's a special component of PostgreSQL. And then using the Python programming, we were able to actually develop this. So this is the system that we have developed. It's still being developed. This is just one flat event that we put in. We are going to put all the 8 return period that we simulated, we are going to put in so that we have several data. So what this system does is that if you, let's say you want a particular area at this side, you see this, all these areas are flooded, we can be flooded, they are going to flood in. So assuming you want to go and buy some property, you want to rent a house or something, you can enter the coordinates of the location, that is the house here. When you enter the coordinate, that is the longitude and the latitude here, then you click submit. Then it will show you the extent of flooding in the area. Yeah. So that's what we have developed so far. So the output of the study is that we have come out with element at real database of the city of Accra, rainfall recurring tables of the city produced, and the flood stage damage functions of different land use types have been also developed. The flood risk reduction strategy scenario were simulated to see the one that will have the greatest impact if it's adopted. The understanding of impact of the setting of the drain on flooding risk reduction was enhanced. We can see that now, if you do only the setting, it cannot solve the problem. So we have also, so the, it's a natural phenomenon. As I mentioned earlier, based on the data set that we used, flooding is a natural phenomenon. It's not as like building on waterways, the drains are choked and blah, 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 that we'll be hearing. It's actually not the case. The natural environment is prone to flooding. Then the Guelph filling station, when the thing happened at that time, people were saying that that place had never flooded before, and that it, because of the ongoing building, the interchange what work there, that led to the flooding. That was the theory people were coming out with, but it's actually not the case. From this study, that place can get flooded. So desetting the drain is also not a very efficient way. So recommendations that we made to be able to solve the problem in Accra, we have to find a means of actually reducing at least a 50-year flood to like a two-year flood event before we can actually, and this can be done through a different different approaches, like a reservoir, that's a retention, which was very efficient, and then also maybe encourage rainfall harvesting, channel improvement, and then the early warning system here. This will require a system dynamic model, as we use here, to be able to actually do all those simulations. And then the authority should be willing to actually commit more resources to solving the problem in Accra, because it is not just the setting that will solve this problem. Potential source of revenue by the system that we created, EPA, though it's a government institution, we generate revenue as well. So if you actually develop the system fully, people can have access, especially like insurance companies, that if you want to insure your property, you can enter the coordinates, the insurance, like the offices can enter the coordinates of the property and see the flooding situation in the area. And based on that, you can estimate the premium that you have to pay. And then we can also use it to help the MDAs in actually developing the town, planning their towns very well. Yeah. And then the challenges that we face, data from Ghana Hydrological Service was not available to be able to do a calibration and the verification of the model. So what we resorted to was the survey that we interview people around who live there and then their past experiences and the water levels, the debt, and then their impact, the impact on their properties. That was that. Then the calibration was based on that. Then that funding to actually upscale the project across the country. Currently, we are trying to do something like that at EPA. We want to carry out this project to cover the entire country, all the flood-prone areas, and develop this system online so that we can go there and use it for different activities. So thank you so far. That's what we have done. regarding this flood model here. Yeah.
Thank you once again, Dr. Sobo, and thank you all for also coming again. I think this is the time to ask questions. So if you have any question on the presentation that he made, quite enlightening, a lot of information.
Thank you very much, Doc, for the presentation. Just as Doc said, quite very enlightening. But then I see, because the question, the topic is innovations in healthcare. I don't know how the presentation is linked to public health, because to me, from my background, it looks as if it is geared towards hydrogeology more than to public health. So I was thinking that closing it, you tell us how all those interventions or the studies, the outcome of the study that we have done is linked to public health, but we are not seeing safe here. So if we can probably throw more light on it.
Thank you very much, Edo.
Yeah.
Will you want to
answer? Oh, yeah, let me respond. It seems you came in late. I knew that this question would come up. So when I started the presentation, I mentioned that public health, disaster management is part of public health. And disaster management is part of public health. When we talk of disaster management, it's not just a situation or the kind of management is setting that we have in Ghana here, where we have blankets, tents, cooking oil, rice, and stuff down, so that when there's a disaster, you go and distribute it. So I was trying to say that for public health, even here, there's a course called disaster management, and that course is an elective subject. So to undertake disaster management, this is a kind of study you have to undertake. You have to do a comprehensive risk profiling of an area, of all the possible disasters in the area. And you find a mitigating measures, and you simulate and see how you can reduce it. And then you actually implement what you have found based on the simulations. And then you see if the disaster still occurs, and then you have what you call preparedness before you actually undertake, like maybe sharing, recovery, and those kind of stuff. And so public health, it's about what? Preserving life. Yeah. So if disaster strike and you don't have any measure in place to actually preserve life, you'll be affected. It's a link. And if you also do this course, health, which the students like a lot. Yeah. If you read that course, you see the content of that course. You have some aspect of disaster management.
In the
evening. It's a link to public.
I put a reliable.
That's a very interesting area. Some lecturers at the University of Ghana wanted to buy a plot of land. And then they wanted to know whether that area was flood prone. So they sent somebody to study the area, and he used the vegetation in studying whether the area was flood prone. What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, you know, the vegetation the person used, you know, there are certain vegetation type that occupy maybe swampy area. So that's what the person's study was based on. But then when you want to really do a study to say flood prone, it involves a lot of work, like what we have done here, where you use a GIS, use a data called DEM, the digital elevation model. The digital elevation model will show you when you drop water or you pour water at any point in the room, it will show, delineate the areas where the water will flow through. So to be able to get a detailed information of an area, you need this kind of thing using DEM data. That is involved in GIS and a lot of, yeah. So it's better, that would be more efficient way of studying the area than using vegetation.
Thank you very much, Doc. This is really exciting. And I just want you to highlight a bit more about the innovation bit of this work. Because, I mean, in the past, what we've seen is social scientists asking people if the community is prone to flooding. But what you've done is that you've used science, you've used GIS, you've used Python to show us how flooding risk can be studied in a particular area. So if you can highlight these innovative technologies and how we can even apply them in our studies,
yeah,
that'll be very exciting. Thank you.
Yeah, so the innovation area here, like you are using a data from satellite images. You know, you have satellite sensors there which collect data over the Earth's surface. With that information, you can get a detailed what features on the Earth. Then in addition to that, you can also get a DEM data, that's the digital elevation model that I said. So you process that data using GIS technology that you'll be able to extract the geometric data that you require for the modeling. But the main innovation aspect here is the one that we are developing, the online system, where we have converted the output of the flood models into a vector map and then put it into a system where we have developed our own web application, so that when you enter the location of any facility into it and you submit it, the system will do a calculation and then show you the flood extent at which the water level can go, so that you use that information to decide whether you go ahead and buy a property there or rent there. And so that is the innovative aspect that we have added to our work here.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Sobo. I have some questions.
Yeah.
So my first question is on the method aspect or the method section. So you presented the number of methods that you did. I want to know if it's actually could be classified into quantitative, qualitative methods that you used. That is the first question. And then my second one is on the risk, flood risk reduction strategy that you presented using the three scenarios. So in your first submission, you presented that in running one of your simulation, you took out all the houses and the infrastructures from that analysis. And still there was always, the environment is prone to flooding. Now in the three scenarios, was it also same or it was in the presence of the facilities or infrastructures? So in the Silton reservoir and then both the Silton reservoir scenarios, did you run the simulations or analysis by factoring in the facilities or infrastructures that are around? I would want to also have that. And then the third one is on policy. How has this findings actually changed any policy so far? Or how is it being used so far? Because currently we are in our rainy season. And this is so, so important, the information that we have. I wonder how government or policies are actually, AMA is using this information that we have. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so regarding the method, the methodology, you can see element at risk database generation. As I said, that one you have to use GIS. That time there wasn't building footprints in place like we have now. So we digitize all the buildings in the image, the high resolution image. So this one is a GIS method. So in terms of quantitative or qualitative, it is quantitative because at the end of the day, the product we are getting is quantitative, it's in numbers. Then the hazard assessment is a scientific method that we will actually use historical data, run fit probability distribution function to them. So we fitted several probability distribution. We selected Gambier extreme value distribution. So that one too is a quantitative data. Then vulnerability assessment, when you use the GIS and the hazard and then the element at risk together, the value you get is also quantitative information. So it's also quantitative. Then the risk analysis, if said, it will be quantified. You know, risk is quantified on a probability scale. So it's also quantitative. Then the various scenarios that we simulated, they are all numbers, they are so quantitative. And then the development of the online flood hazard, that want to use quantitative to develop this. So the final outcome, of course, when you enter, you submit a coordinate, what will come out, the flood depth is also quantitative. So basically they are all quantitative study. Yeah. Regarding the whether structures were used in the modeling, normally the kind of data set you put into the hydrological modeling system and in the hydraulic modeling system, it requires that buildings, features, and those things are not supposed to be on it. So they normally use the floods, like the air surface. And so that's what we call digital terrain model, digital elevation model, so that you don't have the structures on this. But here, the reason why I was comparing it with the structures where we say building on water is that if you look at the data, the modeling, you see all the areas that were flooded, flooding. And people normally say because the buildings are there, that's why the place is flooded. But it's not like that. Even when the buildings are not there, all those places are flooded based on the simulation model. Then regarding the policy, for the policy, actually, as I mentioned, this work is still ongoing. We are currently going to do more of the simulations in Kumasi area and other places, other cities. So I'm currently working with EPA, where that is one of the main research work that is currently ongoing. And then the online tool that we are developing is also at the initial stage. We haven't finished it and launched it at the website yet. So when it's done, when we do all this study and we launch it at the website, it can help a lot of people in policy-wise and everything. So it will be eventually produced in policy formulations and other nations activities. Yeah.
It's just a comment to the class. I'm not sure they would have noticed it, but in your presentation, you showed your theoretical framework and, I mean, the disaster management theory that influenced your work. So please, can you go back and talk about it so they know that it's important to use these things in your work?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is the concept or the framework for disaster management. Now, before you manage any disaster situation, you need to find information about the hazards that you are looking at. Then you collect historical data, you subject it to statistical analysis, and you come out with the probability of that disaster occurring. You know, the probability will give you whether it is high probability or low probability. So these two activities put together is known as hazard analysis, and it's very intensive, like scientifically intensive. So after doing that kind of study, then you also move to the capacity of the area, that is the area that will be affected when a disaster strikes. And then you do vulnerability assessment, how the disaster can impact on all the exposed facilities. So all those that put together will lead to the risk that you quantify. Once you quantify the risk associated with the various elements, then you can come out with countermeasures, that is mitigating measures that will use to reduce the impact of the risk. So using any mitigating measure you adopt will require what resources, financial resources and the human resources and stuff. So you do cost benefit analysis to see whether you have enough resources to be able to actually undertake a particular mitigation measure or the other. So basically that's what it does. And then after you communicate the result. So with that information and the concept that it leads to what you call disaster cycle. For the disaster cycle, we have the risk assessment component. So the area that is highlighted, this area is the risk assessment component. And you do a very intensive work here. And then using the GIS, the technology, and also you can overlay all the various maps, the risks, the hazard maps, and then you quantify the risk. So you get this kind of risk in the area. And then from that information, you use it to design mitigating measures. And with the mitigation measures, when you implement it, then you see how it will impact on the disaster, the area that will be or not be affected, those that will be affected, and the next time you try to improve upon it. So it goes through this kind of cycle. And so you're not just one time something. So this is the concept behind disaster management. So as I mentioned, most of the students, when we talk of disaster management, they thought that it's like the practice we have here where you pack items there when it's such that you go and distribute it to the people. That's all. But it involves a lot of when you go to the field, collect data, do intensive analysis before. So it's a cycle, and that's how it is. So that's what is done in other jurisdictions. So that was the framework that guided the study.
Yes, thank you, sir. In fact, I'm really saddened by this presentation because I seem not to get any headway if policies are not being implemented. For instance, as you said, these platform-prone areas, if they should take out all the structures, mean that no matter what, that place is going to be flooded. But yes, still, people are still living there. And if I'm not even wrong to say, people might even be putting up structures as at now that we speak. And tomorrow only or the day after, we'll see the NADMO people sharing relief item, knowing very well that these places are, flood prone. So it's so difficult to get it. So we, as you rightly said from the beginning, we are expecting the flood. And I'm sure by now, your mattresses and your rice are already to be delivered. Now, my second issue is, so in that regard, what is being done or what is to be done? As you point out some of the things, yes, some are, there's going to be an improvement, but some, I wonder if there's any headway unless I don't get that point clear. And then secondly, this is the Accra situation. What about in other instances? For instance, in Eastern region, we have places which are flood prone. My farm like this, I was like, if I've seen this coordinate thing, I wouldn't have bought my land where I'm now currently farming, and it's a flood prone, and then the whole farm, it's in flood. Uh-huh. So what about in other places, especially even in the north, it's flooding, and then the whole farm become flooded, and it's worse for their crops and all that thing. Can we get those coordinates elsewhere to also make progress?
Yeah, thank you. As I mentioned earlier, it's actually a project ongoing. It's like it wasn't that we are finished and then we are just there and it garden that's on a shelf. It is something that is ongoing. So currently we are doing further studies. We plan to go to Kumasi area and go and do Kumasi area this year. As I mentioned, the plan is that we will do it to cover almost the entire country, all the flood prone areas. Of course, the focus will be on the cities, like the urban areas. When we finish, then we can extend it to like farmlands and other places. So that we want this online system that we are developing to be fully functional, where people can use it to make decisions. That's the ultimate goal. So definitely it will be used in policy formulation. But when I did the first session of this, I did a presentation at the Ministry of Environment, Science and Technology. At that time, a lot of stakeholders came there from different ministries, institutions came there. And that time, Mahama Yariga was the Minister of Environment. But then I learned the day of presentation, he traveled, he wasn't in the country. So the chief director who came there promised out when he returned, he was going to organize another presentation. So I'll come and present to him so that they will take it from there. But then I follow up till now. He's here to return. Uh-huh. It's normally like that. Uh-huh. But then, as I said, the work is still ongoing. Uh-huh. So the final output that we want is the online system that we put there. So even if the government will not take it, individuals, insurance companies, and this will be using the system to take decisions. So eventually it will be used, yeah. But the plan is that when we do like the Kumasi one, we'll be working with the district assemblies too. So when they are mitigating flooding and other side, we'll put it into their plans in both flood management or other disaster management. So it will be used eventually, yeah.
So I saw in your projection that you were also thinking of generating some revenue from this app or this online application. I'm wondering how affordable it will be, because most people too who are not that wealthy enough are the ones having farms that are flooded. everywhere. And so if we are going to target some specific areas like insurance companies, how about other people who are actually not having that much to actually have access to?
Yeah. So the final output or the work, the assessing it, I'm here to, because I'm actually developing everything myself. Like online application, I'm developing it myself. Uh-huh. So it's not like I've gone to hire a consultant where maybe they are charging a huge money and stuff. The only thing is that when you finish, you are hosting it on a server, you'll be paying some amount. Uh-huh. Every, depending on how the kind of arrangement you have with the people. So you pay them monthly or yearly. But then when I check, I assess the current platform available, the money they charge is not so huge. Uh-huh. So once the money is not so huge, hosting it will not be so huge. Costly, they mean that for people to access to will not be that costly. Everybody can access it. Yeah.
So you did say that adding sums or reservoirs to the facility helps reducing flood situations in the city. Take for instance, Udoda. Every now and then will be defaulted. We are entering the rainy season. How possible would that be? Should they add a reservoir to the desilting that is currently ongoing down there?
Yeah, that's as I said, from the simulations, you see that when you desilt, there are just some small quantities, some small areas which are not flooded. Uh-huh. So to be able to improve or like mitigate the flooding situation better, we need retention ponds. And even the one I did, I used only one retention pond, which covers, takes about 3,000 cubic meter. So if you have a number of those kind of retention ponds, it will drastically reduce the flooding situation. So just the desilting will never solve the problem. But we need to do that, yeah. Recently, the government, even the current government, I understand they got some funding, some 200 million from World Bank. That is started about 4 or 5 years ago. That they were going to do when Atacha was the Minister of Works and Housing, that they were going to re-engineer the whole area, the drainage area there, and then they talk about this retention ponds and that will be constructed. But so far, I don't know how far that project has gone. Yeah. Mm.
I'd like to thank you all for coming, and a special thank you to Dr. Sovo for actually honoring our invitation. It's been an amazing.
Hello.
Okay, Godfrey.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Good afternoon. I wanted to ask about the contribution of wetlands towards reduction of flooding. Recently, we've heard of people destroying wetlands. I don't know how much that also contributes to flooding.
For wetlands. Now, the new concept that they normally talk about is nature-based solutions. Now you hear that term as a nature-based solution. So they normally try to propose, let's say, conserving wetlands or leaving those areas where like ponding can take place and those things, so that to reduce flooding. But the fact is that it depends on the area. Like recently, what happened around the coast, the Keta area there, where we have this storm surge. Some hotels or some people were saying that we should actually develop the mangroves along the area so that there will not be. But then that will never solve the solution, because if you have mangroves and wetland, some of the beaches, those areas, you can never develop that plain sand. So there's no way you're going to be developing mangroves and those things. Even if you turn those places to mangroves or wetland, and the storm surge, the seawater goes high, won't it flood the mangroves? It will still flood the place. Uh-huh. So wetlands actually, to some extent, If you have a river flooding, let's say river flooding passing through the natural environment, the forested areas, because of the vegetation, it impedes the velocity of the flow of water. When the velocity is impeded, it allows the water to percolate through the soil. So we have some amount of water what retained in the vegetation, some in the soil. So that's what happens in the natural environment. But then with excess, it cannot absorb all. It will absorb to some extent. And when the ground becomes soggy, it's wet enough. It cannot absorb anymore. So the excess water would still flood the area. So that's why when you go to a forest area, cocoa farm, forest, thick forest, you still see flooding occurring. So vegetation and those things cannot completely reduce flooding.
Is there any more question online? Okay. Thank you once again. My final question is, what is the gap? As researchers are here, if they should follow up on this study, is there any gap that in research based on your study?
Yeah. So the gap, as I said, you know, this data set that we use, the data set, the DEM data, is so expensive that we were able to get it to cover some small area of the catchment in Accra. So we even have a larger part of the population that is not covered. So what we are proposing is that we want to get a drone. If we're able to get a drone, a robust one, we can actually collect the DEM and process it ourselves. So we will not purchase it. So once we get that information, we'll be able to cover a larger portion of the DEM within the entire country. So there are a lot of gaps in the area of research where we are going to undertake.
Okay. Thank you very much, Dr. Sobo. Thank you for your presentation. And thank you for actually answering the questions. You have actually explained a lot of things. Some were technical, but you actually brought it to our level of understanding. And that was very, very good. Thank you once again. At this moment, we'll actually end today's seminar. We have our honorable seminar coordinator here. If there is, so we have a number of seminars, right? So it's a series. So I will just call you, Dr. Kushito, if you have any announcement.
So, but thank you very much. I mean, I have really been, the way we struggled with flooding for so long, I think I share with Naomi's feelings, you know, and maybe as we keep doing our research, we can actually improve the lives of people and the outcomes that they experience, even just with yesterday's rains. All of this side was flooded, you know, and even the other side also just across the road as well. Okay, so our next seminar is in 2 weeks. It happens on the 21st of April, and it will be a scientific writing seminar where we have Dr. Baba Acosta Vroom coming from the University of Ghana to teach us how to do literature review. So that's a writing seminar we'll be having in 2 weeks' time. I hope you would come in your numbers. All right, so thank you very much. And then see you in 2 weeks' time.
Okay. You're welcome. Analysis, but it's the innovation aspect that is required. So that one is also there, so that increase about my impact of.